Hi there. Do I need to sign in?
You're all signed. We'll let you know when it's your turn.
Perfect.
I have a presentation that I don't know if anybody wants to do.
It's a PowerPoint file.
Okay. Are there any amendments or additions to the agenda? Okay, I move to accept this with the unanimous consent. Any objections? All right, so it's approved. All right, the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the December 9th, 2025 Academic Senate. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, I move to approve the minutes by unanimous consent. All right, the next item on the agenda are announcements. The first announcement is that we need nominations for Kansas State Committee. The committee is composed of 6 people, 2 of whom are students. And the Senate is being encouraged to provide the names of 6 faculty, preferably four women and 3 men. They like it. It's actually supposed to be a little bit better represented by women than men. We encourage the student senators to provide the names of student nominees as well. The committee will serve for the remainder of the 2025-2026 academic year, as well as the 2026-2027 year. And it meets only once or twice in academic year. So it's not meeting that often. It's not too much work. Student and faculty nominees should go to the nominating committee website, where there's a link to this committee, right? You said that?
Yes.
All right, so that's just an announcement. Are there any other announcements, reports, or memorials? We're going to move on. We're going to welcome our guest speaker. Today our guest speaker is Assistant Vice President for Law Management, Vivek Kumari.
If I didn't pronounce your name right,
you said it perfectly. Thank you.
Same slide theme has been used because he was talking about investing in the future. I'm talking about enrolling the future itself. I'm the new old guy, I should say. It's been 6 months already that I've been here. So, and some of you have seen me and have interacted with me. And if I have not interacted with you yet, you will get a chance, certainly. Official title, AVP of Enrollment, but basically everything to do with students. It's not just about the numbers, it's actually the students and their success that we are looking at. So in terms of my background and my role here, just so you're aware of it, that, you know, official title is the ADP, but I'm also an adjunct in CS department. I have been an adjunct since 2000, summer. So it's been, this is the 26th year of being an adjunct. So, you know, and that's my my fix with the working with the students in the classroom, that is the best part of the day, in the evening. Daytime, yes, the meetings are fun, but the classroom is the best part. I do have my bachelor's and master's from Queens College, both in computer science, and right now, my area oversees graduate and undergraduate admission, college now, registrar, financial aid. So all the student enrollment services are there. Some background on me that you can see that I've been here at CUNY and at Queens College in and out in different roles. I was a student representative in this Senate a long time ago and on the Technology and Library Committee. So I have served on as on the other side also. And I was responsible for the, I don't know if any of you remember QC Pages academic website. I used to manage that website initially. So that was fun role and relationship with academic senate that I had. And, you know, I'll always cherish that. You know, various roles that I have had at central office or here that have been impacting either staff or student-facing technology. You know, longest serving role was the university executive registrar So some of you have seen memos that you like or you don't like. On the policy memos that have my name on it, that was past life, so don't question me on them anymore. If there is something wrong with them or you need some changes, I'll work with you to get them fixed, and we are working on getting them fixed. But my current role in terms of enrollment is, how do I stabilize enrollment? That you all know what our enrollment numbers are, and you know, enrollment is there which supports our hiring, course availability, sections, evening, weekends, online, you know, and supports the growth overall in terms of the Queen's College, and also the, you know, why are we here for, as an institution for the student success. And by having that enrollment means budget is proper in terms of that, so we don't have to keep discussing the same dollar amount every year that it's declining. With that being said, I want to make sure that, you know, and some of you have worked with already, and some of you are part of the enrollment growth task force that I'll talk about in a second, in terms of, you know, how do I align enrollment growth with academic excellence. We do not want to lower our standards just because I'm trying to increase the enrollment. So our admission standards will remain the same as they have been, both at graduate and undergraduate level. Secondarily, engaging the faculty in recruitment. Some of you have been during the fall semester, attended recruitment event. Thank you for attending the open house. You know, some of you were there, you know, and while I was taking pictures. So that, and those pictures are all online on, and Jay's team, where's Jay? Jay's team has been working on making sure our recruitment website is up to date, and that will include our recruitment event. Our second big event for your calendar is our Become a Knight Day, which is coming up on April 19th. So mailer has been gone out already. You saw it had my name on it, and then, you know, it's on a Sunday. Same thing we do in terms of these students who have committed already or have not committed, for them to chance to come here, meet the faculty, ask questions, whatever is stopping them for truly committing to us. Those are the reasons for the Become a Knight Day. And, you know, one thing that I can certainly commit to is the continuous collaboration. I will be here as I'm invited, so whenever you need me to be here to present on enrollment number one, but if there are policy changes that are needed in terms of, you know, enrollment cycles, just invite and I'll be here to present and have an ongoing partnership with you guys. I wanted to make sure that I share what I've been working on in the last 6 months with the cabinet and with the faculty members from the BNB who are co-chairing it. So in terms of our draft enrollment plan, there are a few pillars that we're looking at in terms of how do we reverse the trend that we have had, and in terms of our recruitment strategy, focusing on, you know, increasing our total enrollment from 15 to 17 in short term, and then primary lever of that being is our traditional population that is dwindling, our high school population. So focusing on transfers, graduate, and improving yield. Students who have shown interest in to us, have committed to us, enrolling them, working with academic affairs, working with the advising units to make sure that, you know, students who have shown the interest of saying that, hey, I want to come here, that we are providing them with the support that they need to be able to enroll, and focusing heavily this year on graduate enrollment also, that we have lots of 4+1 programs that we need to start marketing them to our students, current students, juniors and seniors to qualify for them, so that we are retaining them, number one, and the students are earning double the credential, bachelor's and a master's degree. So that will be our big focus on the recruitment. And there are a few key initiatives for the recruitment that I'm focusing on, which is increasing the high school visits, expanding our presence in every high school, making sure every high school have one visit at least per semester, and, you know, working with the provost office in extending and making sure our community college partnership is more robust, especially with the colleges in Queensboro, you know, Queensboro Community College, LaGuardia, but also going to BNCC, BCC, Hostel. You can get to be from BCC to Queens, Q44 straight. So making that clear to students that, you know, QC Express doesn't just run from Queensboro to Queens, the Q70, but there's a Q44 already in existence from Bronx, so creating that pipeline in terms of the partnership, and then high school council engagement. Those are my best, you know, sellers at the high school level, that making sure they are aware of our, you know, the offerings, You know, we have our undergraduate and graduate handbooks that we just published last fall that have collaboration with the faculty departments. That has the more detailed information on what is the offering. Some students don't even know we offer certain programs, and they ask a question and they call the admission office. When we clarify, they do get, you know, they do say that, hey, I want to be admitted here. Also engaging students early. We have summer programs, you know, for our future nights where we are not engaging them early enough, not just the kids who are in the earlier grades, but also students who come visit us, 9th, 10th graders who will eventually become. So I'm not looking at just fall 26, I'm looking at fall 27, fall 20, fall 30. I'm here for long term. And as I mentioned already, expanding our 4+1 offering. In terms of retention and student success, which is the key piece, now that I've brought them here, I need to keep them here too. So that you know, I'm providing all the support that is needed to make sure the students are succeeding and graduating, raising our retention rate from 77% to, you know, 80 to 81%. It's a modest increase in the short term, and then increasing our graduation rate, 6-year graduation rate, and big emphasis on proactive advising, making sure students are aware of that advising services are available before they need to enroll, visiting them, you know, making sure they are set up correctly. Our fall and spring enrollment will be here, fall and summer enrollment will be here soon. So go meet with the advisor now that you're enrolled for the spring semester already, and, you know, get advice on what to take if you're not sure. Use the tools that are there, Navigate, DegreeWorks, that are available to you to be able to advise on what to take, are you on track or not. But whenever you're lost, you know, Academic Advising Center, shout out to Laura, is always there to assist with that, to, you know, to make sure that you're on the right track. A few key initiatives that we are looking at is, number one, as I said, proactive advising model, that the students are aware of it, that, hey, there is help available when I need it. First year experience relaunch, potentially in the near future, we're looking at it, FYI or FYE, that some of you know about. Those are part of the planning process, the cohort-based model, you know, learning communities, that some of you call them, so that we know from the data that those models succeed. And we just need to restart that and implement it. Biggest change has been in the last few years is our Learning Commons and tutoring services that are so great, and they provide great services. Students do use them. We have seen the numbers, but we want to increase that number. So the students are visiting the Learning Commons, visiting the Tutoring Service Writing Center for the support that they need in terms of and to succeed. As I mentioned earlier that the high school pipeline are dwindling in terms of our traditional high school students. So we need to look at who else wants to come to Queen's College. You know, there are adult and reconnect learners that, you know, students who have few credits and they never finish their degree. So how do I re-engage them? Either they were QC students, or they are from any other college, either CUNY or non-CUNY, doesn't matter. We're trying to engage with all of them to bring in here and, you know, have them finish their degree. In terms of that, working with deans and departments to see, you know, how can we be more flexible in terms of evening classes, weekend classes, so that students have that flexibility in taking classes and complete the degree that they started 5 years ago, or some of them 20 years ago, some of them 30 years ago. We want to expand the CUNY Reconnect, which is supported by the New York City. City Hall has been funding that program, but not robustly funding. We want to expand that program. We want to have a Back to QC Back campaign to bring students who have not finished their degree but have some credit, and create an adult degree pathway, a formal pathway to completion of the degree. We used to have adult continuing ed, ACE program in the past. You know, rethink that program and make it more flexible for the students to be able to complete the degree. Those are very high level. And, you know, the PNB faculty that are present in the Enrollment Growth Task Force, I meet with them every 2 weeks. Larissa from Anthro, she's the co-chair, and so faculty are there, eight faculty members who are involved in that, and there was a call out from your department chairs, if you have seen it, it was done in the fall, and if you still need to, or you feel like you want to help out with enrollment, you want to serve on it, email is easy. Just first name, vivek@qc.qe.edu. Shoot me an email, and you know, I'll be happy to engage with you. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
Hi, I'm Fidel Barnes from Institute. Thank you very much for the presentation. I appreciate all the initiatives. If
But I think there's something fundamental missing here, and that is, what was the cause of the precipitous drop in enrollment? It seems to me that until we understand this, we can't really address the problem effectively. I mean, you said that there's a declining pipeline of high school students, but that's a secular trend, and our enrollment drop was a precipitous one, so it can't be the explanation. Something happened, so I think it would be really important to know what happened, because that would be the immediate cause that we can't tackle.
No, thank you for that question. And two-pronged approach. One is, as I am fixing the operation and analyzing what has caused the decline, I need to start working on, you know, immediate short-term, low-hanging fruit that I can fix right away. These strategies are not for 10 years. These are 1 or 2 year strategies right now that I need to do, by the way. I am still analyzing the data that why. There are some reasons that we know about, you know, that why shouldn't leave. You know, our Office of Institutional Research has put out a great survey that if you have not seen it, in terms of retention survey. What are the reasons? Some are financial barriers for the students. Some are just that the offering that we have, they didn't want it and they wanted somewhere else. I do not have the full analysis, and once I have it, I will come back and I'll present that to you.
Eric Rosado, Assistant Professor of Accounting Director of the Master's Program in Accounting. One thing I did not hear at all is, and maybe you can speak to this, maybe it's above my pay grade, I don't know, but having come from CUNY Central, can you, this is two parts, explain why we're not on Common App, and then follow up with when we're going to get on Common App?
Great question. So, right in the middle of working with procurement at CUNY Central to get on the Common App. So, what is the timeline? I don't have finality, but looks like we will be live in 2027 fall for the Common App. And as soon as I have the dates finalized in terms of term, they just need to make sure we were on Common App, if some of you know, last time. It was a very manual process. Queens College was on Common App earlier, but student supporting staff, they had to manually enter the data from Common App into our student integration system because there was no data flow happening. So even though we got, like, let's say 300 students, they had to be manually entered the system. One of the key factors that we told central office, I'm not doing manual work. You need to figure out how to automatically load these students in the system because now it's a university wide effort. So it was presented as an agenda item on the enrollment management, and we all agreed that we need to be because the visibility matters. And you know, right now we are not visible. Last time, just so you're aware of it, when we did the pilot with Common App, lots of students who were applying through Common App were also applying through the CUNY App. So there was a major duplication and cleanup that needed to happen. So we're trying to avoid that. That students who are applying to Common App, they will be told that you don't need to apply. There are issues with Common App. They don't allow the, you know, our flavors that we have 6 applications for 1 fee at undergraduate high freshman level and 4 at the transfer. So those are the details that we're working on, and as soon as I have the detail, I'll come back. So good news. Any other question? All right. I thank you again for inviting me, and I hope to see you guys soon.
December 11th, 2025, and I ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? All right, hearing no objections, the motion is going to be, I move for the motion to be accepted under unanimous consent. Okay. The GCC minutes?
Yes.
On the graduate curriculum committee's behalf, I move to accept their minutes dated December 3rd, 2025, and I ask for amendments.
Are there any objections? It's approved.
Thank you.
Now we're moving to the nominating committee report.
Tina Pagano, Chair of the Nominating Committee. I move to approve the report dated February 5th, 2026, with one condition, the nomination of Victoria Fisher for the now vacant seat for the School of Math and Natural Sciences to the UCC. I move for unanimous consent.
Any objections? All right, it's approved. The Election Committee report.
Development Apology. I just wanted to add that the version of that first sentence that Karen just read is word for word the version that we approved, this body approved in November 2024. This version that you're seeing, it was actually the wrong version that was sent to the Academic Senate. So it's really just a reversion to what we already approved in November 2024.
Laura Sells is also a member of our committee. There's three faculty members. And I'm happy to read that sentence again, if anybody would like me to. You want me to read it again? Yeah. So the sentence we're asking to replace, the first sentence would say, neither photographs nor recordings, audio or video, of all or parts of classes at Queen's College may be made without written permission from the course instructor. With an S and an N.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do people want to go to the microphone to ask a question?
Yeah.
Hi. Hi. For those of us, history. I have a question because I had a student ask me about recording, and if my class would need just lectory, then of course it makes sense that I should have the authority to authorize it or not. But what about a discussion-based class, a seminar, where other students would? Do I have the authority to give student permission to record other students in class?
Yeah, I think
it
would be I'm not an expert on this, so I mean, but I think it would be up to you and the students to decide whether. So you'll see that there is a clause, or there's a paragraph, the second paragraph says, the Office of Student Affairs and the Office of Special Services may provide for the recording of classes on behalf of the student receiving disability accommodations. You know, I won't read the whole thing to you. But there are circumstances where a student might ask for the course to be recorded, and then you should accommodate the student. If it's a discussion-based class, I mean, you can make an argument that they might not gain that much from a recording because part of the experience is participating in the discussion, but that would be a conversation with the student and the class. And I think it also depends on the class itself and what you're talking about.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Could you move for United States?
Right.
Oh, actually, I still need to do it. I did do it. Okay,
yeah.
Move to bring admin's consent.
Are there any objections?
There's a question.
Oh, you have a question? Okay, go up to the
microphone. For you, tomorrow, student, like an academic senator, I don't have a question regarding policy, so wouldn't it be like more ideal to create a policy based on discussion-based classes and classes that are more lecture-based, just to make it a bit more better for students? Because even for me as a student, in classes sometimes we're discussing, I don't get every single opportunity to listen to everyone and remember everything or for the classes. So it would be ideal if if there's a policy based on that and not just something for everyone, if that makes sense.
I mean, to respond to that, and again, I'm not an expert on this, but I would say that might be a different conversation, whether we want to have a different kind of policy for lectures versus discussion-based classes. I'm an English professor. I also teach women and gender studies classes, and so my classes are all discussion-based, and actually, this is an interesting tip for those of you teaching discussion-based and all lecture classes. I took over winter break, I took a workshop on universal design, and I learned that both PowerPoints and your Apple computer, I don't know if PCs have this, will caption everything you're saying as you're talking to your students, and it captures, and it's amazing. I started doing it in my discussion-based women and gender studies class, and my students love it, that they can see, and it's incredibly accurate. So this is actually not really related to that. It's not recording anything, it's just live captioning, and then it disappears after the captioning. So there are ways, I think, to accommodate students who might have a hard time following, oral with an AU, RAL, like discussions. and need some accommodation to help. That doesn't necessarily mean reporting.
Tina Pagano, psychology. I just wanted to bring up another point, because it's come up in our courses, especially the online courses. So if you do, if the instructor does give permission for a course to be recorded, you're also capturing student comments, possibly student pictures, and that might make other students feel uncomfortable wondering how that would be addressed. And, I mean, could there be something included that the instructor needs to get permission of the student in the class?
This is for classes at Queens College, so it doesn't count, the online classes don't count.
Well, even in a classroom, however, I mean, students' voices are recorded. I know, I mean, not
so that's more along the lines of what was just discussed.
So, are you suggesting we add it with permission from the course instructors and students?
Well, I would imagine that that should be fair. I mean, if I were a student in a class and I'm on the shyer side and I don't want my comments, I may be intimidated to speak.
Just a lot of psychology, that's a very good point. How about if we just add on to the end of that sentence and say, from the course instructors and any students who may also be captured in such a recording.
Is that a motion to table?
Can I make a motion to table and there's a standing motion? I won't make the motion yet, I'll be better
tomorrow. Arizona Accounting, not only the expert, however, as I explain to my students all the time when I go through my syllabus, due to FERPA, which guarantees the rights of personally identifiable information, which speaks to your point, Tina, about voice, etc., etc., I make sure they understand that that's not allowed. And I also even think requesting the permission of all students, I feel like that can be a little coercive. Because there's that pressure to, oh, well, everybody else is saying yes. So to your potential perspective, motion, I do think it needs to be discussed. I think the language as it exists, which is not as you see it there, which is the point, is it actually does include photography, because when we're having this discussion, November 24 is strong enough and sufficient enough. I understand potentially the may be subject to versus the will be subject to, but I think the open line, et cetera. But I think, again, tabling it as a standing motion is a strong idea. So.
Could we get as much feedback as we can now? Because we are a small committee and we'd like to get this done once and for all so we don't have to keep discussing it in committee and bringing it back. So, is there anything else that we should be considering? And if not, I just want to throw out the idea that what we could consider would be an extra sentence in that first paragraph that simply says, other students may not be recorded, period.
Without the permission. Maybe just period. I'm a physics department. So this text also includes research classes, as I understand. And many of our research classes are funded by agencies, and they have the data management policies, and as a faculty, I cannot tell a student not to take pictures or record the data. This would be in violation of or data management policies. I'm not suggesting.
Wait, can you explain that again? Sorry.
Yeah. There are some data management policies where I have to store the data, and a student who's taking a research class, and the student has some findings or view the apparatus, the student can take pictures without my permission. Can store the data, who have it, go to, not to say no.
In the classroom?
Yes.
In the classroom.
And it's also for integrity of research, because if there is some mismanagement, the student has the right to report it. Yes. Another issue.
If you don't have to be from the art department, I have more of a hierarchy question suggestion. I feel like in the spirit of this, the second sentence of the third paragraph, students and visitors are not authorized to copy, download, or disseminate authorized recordings to others. I feel like it's a much more important point that should be brought up into the first paragraph. I feel like the spirit of this is about the recording, but also what might that recording be used for. And so I just want to suggest that being moved up into the first paragraph.
Peter Lillerman, political science. Occurs to me in some classes, instructors may record or want to record discussions that students are having. Or activities that students are doing. And maybe that's a totally separate policy question, but I don't know if there's a policy that governs that, restricts it, that requires student permission. And if, I don't know if this is the kind of feedback that we're hoping for, because it's more of a question than a suggestion, but if we're creating a policy for eternity about classroom recordings, I wonder if it might address what's legally allowable and required under this when the instructor is doing it.
Right. So was there an amendment made then to begin with? That the students can be recorded without their permission.
Or
we
can move to table.
I was
going to
suggest that.
So it looks like the website's got a classroom photography and recording policy already posted.
So that is originally approved in November 2024.
Right.
And the change we were originally suggesting was simply to take the last sentence and change the word are to may be. Students in violation of the policy may be subject. That was the only change to this whole thing.
And also on the provost website, there was an earlier version.
Right, and there are actually different versions on different parts of our website, one of which is the one we originally approved in January 2024. And one of which is the version we more recently approved in November 2024, which is this one. So, what does this leave us?
This is
the one that's currently in effect, right? Based on the if we conserved in November 2024. So we're making a motion to change it, to change R to maybe. That was originally what we were making.
It seems to me, so a lot of us have said we're not legal experts. It seems to me we should make sure we're making a legally sound policy before we approve it. And actually, that's what
we're doing. This is an expert from a legal standpoint.
I don't have any, I'm not a lawyer at all, but I will say that, and I don't remember what it looks like, but our initial version of this was from based on the law school, on the CUNY law school. And so, presumably, it's a bunch of lawyers and lawyers in the
room. Personally, I think it's good enough.
if you just go with the 9 attempt,
which was what is being proposed,
just being proposed,
and
we just need the 9 attempt, and my opinion is we should just do the little change and move on.
So this was approved in 2024. I would like to propose that it be amended to students in violation of this policy may be subject to disciplinary action. Of course, there are many different kinds of classes taught on our campus, and if there are other requirements, like you can explain that to students in your class if they bring it up. You are not required to have this policy on your syllabus. And if someone wants to bring up another policy for the policy board and administration to consider, I think we would be happy to consider it. So for now, I put forward a motion to change that to students in violation of this policy may be subject to disciplinary action. To vote on that.
So do we have unanimous consent on that? Are there any objections?
Right. It's fine for us. We can simply tell them, don't do this, not totally stupid. It's still risky. So maybe we should think about it.
You don't have to put this on your syllabus. So, can you clarify what this
is? No, I don't need to put this on my syllabus, but this is the official policy.
So, to my mind, this policy only really gets probably, my guess is it would only get enforced or disciplinary action only thought of if a student takes a recording and that recording is used in a way that harms somebody else. That's the intent of the policy, is to prevent harm to people who need recording in the classroom.
But this is not clear from the text.
Well, we don't need to say in a policy whether the intent is in that broad perspective.
So if you have a piece of a whistleblower, a student who wants to be a whistleblower, or a certain activity in the lab, regular activity, then the student will be afraid.
I would hope that the student faculty disciplinary committee would look at a recording made in a case where someone's a whistleblower and weigh factors and actually come to a reasonable conclusion regardless of the policy. But that's just my opinion. I don't know if you thoughts on that.
I guess you can interpret there's no unanimous consent.
Is there further debate?
Sorry, I don't want to make this too long. But isn't Ahmed less of a deterrent if you're decreasing the disciplinary actions by changing the last line to make instead of the bill?
I think that precisely it underscores the point I just made, that not in every case will a recording lead to disciplinary action. It has to be weighed by those looking at the complaint, looking at the recording, looking at the syllabus, figuring out what the complaint's about, and presumably there are reasonable people that will be looking at the evidence in these cases. So that's why it's fuzzy, right? If you do it in clear violation and you're out to dox somebody and post them on the internet out of context, then maybe you're more likely to be subject to disciplinary action than if you're trying to show something that's happening that shouldn't be happening.
Is there any further debate? If not, can we vote on the amendment that was? Alright, to turn shall to May. All in favor?
Okay. Yeah, if you're in favor, please raise those cards.
Are we getting a seat?
just want to add about 2 cents here. I just believe that we shouldn't have to change the end of the last sentence, because if already says in the first sentence, neither photographs nor recordings may be made without written permission. So if they're already asking permission to use that content and then go back to that, like if you say disrespect any other student, then you should probably have disciplinary action for them, not maybe, because you already asked permission from the teacher.
So we're back to voting now. On the motion that was made, all in favor, raise your cards.
Yes, it's more than 31. Passed.
33.
All right. So the motion passed?
Yeah.
All right, so I think, yeah, that's it. Let's call for the motion to adjourn. Thank you for the debate. I was supposed to debate you, not this.